Welcome along to the Matchbook Betting Podcast, the show dedicated to bringing you betting insights to help you make smarter and more informed bets. I am Emmett Kennedy, joined as usual by Matchbook's big bet expert, it's Jesse May.
Loving the NFL right now, Emmett. We were 3-0 with the charity bets last week. And I think a large part of that was due to our new contributors. So great stuff, guys.
So no pressure on the team this week. First up, ESPN's Kian Fahey.
I don't think I was 3-0 the last time I was on this podcast, so I'm not going to boast about anything I did.
Shh, Kian, you can just pretend. You can just take all the credit. Matchbook's NFL expert, Brad Allen.
Good afternoon, Emmett.
And the founder of the Betting Emporium, the godfather himself, Neil Channing.
Oh, hello.
I presume you're off to the NFL in London this weekend.
No, I am going to go to one later in the year. I can't remember, I think it's like week 10 or something like that.
Yeah, because you are a big fan of those, it has to be said. And it's great, and it's back, and it's on TV as well, which is fantastic for all of us. Also, it's brilliant that the NFL is back, and Matchbook are hugely behind it. The liquidity on the exchange is massive for it. It's set to be Matchbook's biggest ever season for the NFL. Coaches and players have playbooks, but Matchbook customers and bettors can have a playbook of their own with articles from our very own Brad Allen, Adam Chernoff, Stephen O'Rourke, and Aidan O'Sullivan, along with podcast tips that you'll get weekly on this very show. And you can find out all things about college football as well. Insights.matchbook.com/playbook for all the information that you need. And Jesse, we've also got a big offer on Matchbook for the NFL as well.
Yeah, it's a bit of fun this weekend. If you bet on 3 NFL games on Sunday, £20 minimum or $20, you will get a risk-free £20 bet on the Monday night game. That's Cowboys at Cardinals, or shall I say Cardinals.
Sorry, Evan. You don't even have anything to be shouting about. Your team's pathetic as well.
Yeah, they topped. They topped them easily.
Oh, so. But we were bad. We were really bad.
A free risk-free bet on Monday night to get stuck in on Sunday. So try that out.
And I guarantee you I'm going to stay up and watch it as well, and just because I'm a sucker. Anyway, Sunday Night Football on NBC is the 2-0 Oakland Raiders against the 1-1 Redskins. We'll get the thoughts of Kian first of all, but the betting on Matchbook currently, Jesse, is...
So it's Oakland -3, and that's cross-country with the over-under at 54.
So Carr was obviously so crucial to Oakland last year before picking up that horrible injury which ruled out his season and effectively ended their season as well. Kirk Cousins is engaged in this fascinating standoff with the Redskins. They got a win over the weekend. Kian, set the scene for us on Sunday Night Football.
I think the interesting thing from Washington last week was the way they approached that game. It wasn't, like, since Cousins has been the starter, they've very much been a pass-heavy team where Cousins kind of does all these throws short to instead of running the ball. But last week, they kind of recognized that Cousins was coming off a bad game and that the Rams weren't good at defending misdirection runs. So they used a lot of that and they had huge success. I don't think that will really work against Oakland. I think Oakland's, like, the fragility of the Oakland defense is the secondary and the linebackers and coverage. The defensive line is okay, and Khalil Mack is obviously dominant. So I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball like they did last week. And that'll be a problem because Washington's defense, to me, doesn't look very good. And it looks like a kind of game where Marshawn Lynch is going to have a big day. And obviously Derek Carr with those receivers is always going to threaten. So I like the Raiders in this game. And I think the fact that it's a late game, it's not an early game traveling cross country. Not now, when I say early, I mean 4 o'clock local time, 9 o'clock our time. But the fact that it's got an extra 3 or 4 hours there should help Oakland or any travel. And that's always an important thing. But Oakland has traveled pretty well, if I'm not mistaken, over the last year or two as well. So I like Oakland, and I'd probably take the -3 there.
Okay, Sunday Night Football is Oakland Raiders for Kian. Neil, I know you're very keen to talk about this game. What way do you want to approach it?
Well, the first thing is that we've talked a couple of times this season already about how the early weeks of the season, you need to be a little bit careful about backing overs. So far, there's been an average of 40.5 points in the games, which after week two is the lowest for 8 years. And I think we did slightly call it on the show because we've been talking about how defenses can be in the ascendancy early in the year, mostly because offense is a bit harder to learn than defense, but also partly because the defensive players are slightly less banged up. Having said all of that, I personally quite like the over in Sunday Night Football last week, and I like the over in Sunday Night Football again this week. And for a number of reasons, I agree with what Kian said. I tend to think if you're looking to find an over trying to find teams that are weak in the secondary or have got injuries in the secondary is a good way of picking games that you like the look of for over, as a general thing. And another general thing when I'm looking for overs is I quite like to take teams from opposing conferences. If teams are very familiar with each other, for example, in divisional games, not just because they're very familiar, but also because of the intensity that those games are played at, the points are often lower, and you don't get as much kind of cheap points. Whereas in games where the teams don't really know each other as well, like out of conference games, they don't play as often, the totals often come in a bit higher. They don't seem to care about every point. And if we look at the trends on that, just with these teams, you can see that Oakland in non-conference games, if we go back, I go back to 2010 just because it builds a big enough sample size, although I wouldn't argue with anyone that said, well, what difference does it make what happened in 2010? In non-conference games, Oakland, the over is 16, 11, and 1. So 16 times over, 11 times under, and one time. If you just bet all the non-conference games, you'd have had a tie. So I you know, that kind of supports it. So if you go with Washington on the same thing and look in non-conference games, they've played 28 non-conference games since 2010, and over is winning 17-11. So I do think it's two teams that, you know, are pretty wide open. If you just look at their games from last year, you can see that Washington had 12-4 to over last year. And if you take Oakland games from last year, you'll find, where are we? Let me just get that in front of me. Oakland games last year, 12-5 to over. So they're both very much over teams. Now, I appreciate the total. You might think it's quite high at 53.5, but I can see this really moving up. I've taken it already, and I wouldn't put anyone off getting involved early on. I don't know, but I'm always willing to listen to other views. If anyone totally disagrees with me, shoot me down.
Brad, do you want to shoot down Neil's overs bet for Sunday Night Football?
I've no strong opinion on the total, but I do agree with Kian on the Raiders -3. I've already bet that, and I think that's a good shout. He mentioned the timings there, and the West Coast teams do have a little advantage in primetime games just based on body clocks. Obviously, for them, it sort of kicks off at 5-ish on their body clock through till about 8, 8:30, whereas the East Coast teams kicks off at 8-ish, and it finishes close to 11, 11:30. And it does seem to be the West Coast team has more energy and he's more sprightly, you could say. And so they're 9-2 against the spread in that situation over the last three seasons. And I also think the Raiders are a little bit underrated by the market. Last year, there was a lot of talk about them winning all these close games, and they're going to regress to the mean this year. And so their season wins was only 9 this year, despite having young quarterback, young receivers, and winning 12 games last year. And I think they're kind of growing into that record. I think they're putting up the base stats this year. They've won 2 games pretty convincingly, covered the spread. And I think they could be a real 12-win team. Well, the Redskins, they're not really, are they? They're 7-8 win team. So I think laying the 3 points is a good shout.
All right, fascinating stuff from Brad as well. We're going to bring you in for the second game, which is kicking off at 9:05 at our time on Sky Sports. Let's first of all get the betting on Matchbook currently. Seahawks against Titans. Jesse?
I feel like we've been involved with the Seahawks every week, or at least I've been following them anyway. They're getting 2.5 here, although I think it was 3, if I'm not mistaken, and it's been moving with the over-under at 42 against the Titans.
So the best defense in the league heads to Tennessee this weekend. Keane, set the scene for us.
I'm still trying to figure out the Titans' offense, because they went through that game last week for first 3 quarters or so, and it looked like it was so disjointed, and it's been that way since Mike Mularkey was there. And the Titans have this quarterback who is great at short throws, great at intermediate throws, and the head coach wants him to throw the ball down the field on these vertical routes. And that just, it's not working, and eventually they reach a point in the game where they realize we've got to change this up and go to a different type of approach. And that's why they'll probably be better in the second half of games this year if that continues to go the way it goes. I think the Seahawks, if this was at home, it's similar to like the Packers game we talked about a couple of weeks ago, I think on paper, if the Seahawks were at home, they'd easily win this game and be a dominant victory. But you just don't know with them traveling on the road. And so it'll probably be a close game. I wouldn't feel confident on either side of the ball or on either side of the 3 points. So I think I would probably go with Tennessee just because they're at home and just because Russell Wilson struggled last week and because that offensive line is going to remain a major mismatch.
Hey, Kian, I mean, you and Mike both kind of labeled the Seahawks best team on paper when we were in our preseason talks. What do you think about them now? I mean, is there enough data to decide that things are different or the same?
I'm more concerned now, and I'm not concerned because of the offensive line, because we knew the offensive line was going to be bad. My concern is how Russell Wilson is playing. One of the developments in the second week was Russell Wilson is now dropping the ball to his hip and whipping it around like a windmill. And that's never something he's ever done. And that suggests to me that his shoulder isn't where it has been. That's the kind of thing Josh McCown and Ryan Fitzpatrick do, because they have to try and generate the velocity in the ball throwing it like that. And Wilson has never been that guy. And because he's doing that while throwing passes that are floating and passes that are being overthrown too often, that's a major concern there. But again, we have to kind of be wary that it's only been 2 weeks. It's only been 2 games. You don't want to completely overreact. But right now, I probably wouldn't argue as vociferously as I did a couple of weeks ago. I would still say they're one of the very best teams in the league, but it's a lot more about the defense now, whereas I thought they would be a bit more balanced when we were coming into the year.
Brad, I know this is a game you're quite keen to talk about. Which way are you leaning?
Well, that's a very interesting point on Russell perhaps having injuries to the shoulder. But I mean, I am on the Seahawks. I bet the Seahawks. Because I mean, you can probably still get them +3 at about 10 to 11, maybe it's slightly more expensive than that, and that pretty much suggests that the Titans are the better team at this point, because Tennessee's home field advantage is 2 to 2.5 points, and I really don't see how you can say the Titans are better than the Seahawks at this point in time. So in 2 weeks, the Titans, they've beaten the Jaguars, which, you know, they beat Blake Bortles. It was 6-3 at halftime. It wasn't that convincing. I think the final score was probably a bit deceiving. And then they also got pretty comprehensively outclassed at home by the Raiders. So I don't know why they're suddenly 3-point home favourites against who most people would agree, as Kian says, one of the best teams in the league. Now, Seattle, they've not been impressive. We kind of knew the offensive line was a bit of a hole. But I think last week you can kind of write that game off. It was raining. They dropped 2 touchdowns in the first half. I mean, they still held San Fran to 89 yards. But it just seems, for whatever reason, the market has decided the Seahawks aren't that good anymore. I mean, the look-ahead line for this game was Seahawks as 1-point favourites. So why it's moved 4 points, I have no idea why, and I think it's a matter of reaction, and I think there's a value on the Seahawks.
Liking that. Neil, what's your thoughts?
I don't have any strong view on the game, but this I was particularly swayed by what Brad just said, which the last thing, which is, you know, that this game was predicted to be Seahawks by 1. It opened Tennessee by 1. Now, the line moves around 0 don't really mean much. Moving from +1 to -1 is nothing. But then to move through to Tennessee -3, well, that, you know, that's, or 2.5 and 3, it's kind of 3. You have to bet odds on if you want to get +3 Seattle. But that's a massive move. And although the limits are smaller earlier in the week, that feels like a bit of an overreaction. So if I had a bet, it would only be with Seattle, but I'm not sure that I'm going to get too involved in this one.
All right, the third game we're going to talk about is a 9:25 kickoff on our time on Sky. It's the Bengals against the Packers, betting on Matchbook from Jesse.
Green Bay, in Green Bay. We struck with earlier, first game of the season. But here, the Packers favored by 8.5. The over under 44.5, guys.
0-2 Cincinnati, 1-1 Packers. They couldn't get it done last week. We know what a huge fan of Aaron Rodgers you are, Kian. Do you think that given the margin of superiority they have in the market, that they're just going to get it done this weekend?
I think they will. I think the problem last week was the offensive linemen, the offensive tackles, both of them are out. And when you're missing all of your starting offensive tackles, it's not just that you're missing your starters, it's that the backup or the quality of backup linemen in the NFL is really poor. And they were also missing their third tackle. So I wouldn't read a huge amount into the Falcons display. I would kind of push that to the side. They're going to be at home. The Bengals are a complete disaster. I think they're one of the few teams who haven't scored a touchdown yet. And Andy Dalton is just not built to function behind an offensive line that isn't good, that isn't one of the best in the league. Mm. And their line has proven to not be one of the best in the league. I think this should be a fairly easy Green Bay victory. Obviously, the 8.5 is a big number to cover. But at home, with Aaron Rodgers coming off of one of those games where people kind of start to question the quality of his team a little bit, his whole relaxed comments and stuff like that, I think this might be kind of one of the game where they come out and they just kind of they really look to overwhelm their opposition. The one concern is you don't know how healthy Jordy Nelson's going to be.
Yeah.
And if I don't think Jordy Nelson's absence would be enough to swing the game, but it might be enough to let the Bengals hang around and stick around, because that offense, like we talked about previously, is not stacked with loads of weapons. It's got a couple of top guys like Martellus Bennett and Ty Montgomery. Looks like he's played really well this year. So losing Nelson is going to be a big deal. He's got a quad injury. Maybe he plays, but even if he plays, he's probably not going to be 100%.
Just when you thought the Jets were going to be the outright worst team in the league, along comes Cincinnati. So the Packers coming into the game on the back of a defeat, but then again, it was to the Super Bowl runners-up. Neil, how do you want to approach this game? Hot favourites. Keen sounds confident about them. Are you?
No. So first of all, we're in week three, as you well know, and there are 7 teams that have covered the spread in their 2 games so far. So 7 teams were, if you bet on them both weeks, with them, you'd have had 2 losers. And those teams are New Orleans, the Jets, the Giants, the Chargers, the Bengals, the Cardinals, and actually Seattle. And if you bet historically, the teams that haven't covered in the first 2 weeks, in week 3, you'd have 44 winners and 32 losers. You'd be 44 and 32 against the spread. So I just throw that out there because, you know, we talked a bit last week about how people tend to overreact. And this American football is such a small sample size, a 16-week season. And people get very carried away by what they saw last week. And that is why I think we've said it a couple of times on the pod this year already. That is, recency bias is why the market is beatable in NFL. And that trend just tells you all you need to know about that. If you bet on the ugly teams, the teams that people don't like, the teams that have done poorly, you will make money. And it's a very simple system. Betting on the teams that haven't had a winning bet for you so far in the year on the 3rd week, it's been historically a good thing.
You love Green Bay at home. Have you ever bet against them at home before?
I'm not a huge fan of betting against them at home. Here's another one. If you bet on 0-2 ATS teams, so teams that haven't had a winning bet this year, and they're underdog getting less than half of the bets in week 3, and in this game around about 80% of the money so far is on Green Bay, you'd be on a run of 36-26 against the spread. Now, you know, obviously Kian mentioned the injuries. Green Bay have a couple of injuries. Jordy Nelson's questionable, Randall Cobb's questionable. They had the injuries with the offensive line last week, which definitely made a difference. But the other thing I found quite interesting, I decided to look back and have a think about the Cincinnati game so far. And it's right, they have been pretty terrible. But if you look at that first game, which was week 1 against the Ravens, they lost 20 to zip. And they turned the ball over 5 times in that game. And if you look at where they were when they turned the ball over, they were on the Ravens' 6-yard line, 9-yard line, 39-yard line, 44-yard line, and once in their own territory, they turn it over on their own 12-yard line. I think that score was a bit misleading, and that, you know, they suffered very badly from those turnovers. There is an argument for saying that teams turn over the ball generally, you know, for lots of reasons, none of them very good. But there is also a slight argument for saying that that can be a bit random and there can be a regression to the mean there. So I sort of think that. And then last week against the Texans, they did actually, it was pretty similar in terms of they didn't really kind of get what they deserved. They got into the red zone 3 times and just got 3 field goals. They gained more yards than the Texans, and they generally have better field position than the Texans. but they didn't beat the Texans. So I'm sort of saying that the two losses that they've had, as woeful as they've looked, have maybe they can bounce back from that. I personally have bet Cincinnati in this one, and I think that the line's just a little bit too far for my eyes. But I could be persuaded, but I've already got my money on.
Kian, on that, I mean, as far as Green Bay goes, against the Atlanta team, were they kind of exposed there as not being that as good as people thought? Or was it more like a bit of a fluky score because they lost like 15 points in 2 minutes, I think.
I don't think people think Green Bay are that good this year. I think last year we kind of saw Aaron Rodgers drag them to the NFC Championship game. Mike Daniels was missing for that game last week, and that's a big loss for them. He obviously made the play in week one against Seattle that caused the fumble that kind of turned that whole game in Green Bay's favor. And then you have the tackles who are missing, who I already talked about. But I think the Packers aren't one of the best teams in the league. I'm probably just more pessimistic on the Bengals. I think the Bengals are so bad on offense that even if they have a decent defense, they're not going to be able to compete in games with it. The Packers defense is kind of... The Packers defense might be something they can attack a little bit because they don't have great pass rushers. They don't have great coverage guys. The Packers defense is a lot of young guys like Kevin King playing a cornerback, and they're still trying to figure things out, and it's going to be a lot easier against AJ Green and Tyler Eifert this week. Not because AJ Green is worse than Julio Jones, but because AJ Green's support, the support he's going to get from his quarterback and from his offensive line, aren't going to set him up for the success the way Julio Jones did last week. I tend to think we're kind of talking about Falcons as one of the better teams in the league, the Packers as one of the middling teams in the league, and the Bengals as one of the worst teams in the league. So that's kind of why I'm confident in the Packers at home.
Yeah, I'm actually shocked that Neil went against the Packers there. That was the last thing I was expecting. But that's the beauty of the Matchbook Betting Podcast. That's the beauty of the NFL. And the final game we're going to preview is the early kickoff on Sunday, 6 p.m., as the Steelers head to Chicago. Betting on Matchbook, Jesse.
Will they even take bets on this game? My God. Chicago's getting 747 points. No, sorry, that's seven. Seven. The over-under is 44.
2-0 Steelers against the 0-2 Bears. Key in Chicago have been awful.
Yeah, I think last week they got out. Well, actually, I would say they weren't awful in week one. I think last week they were awful, and it was because they got away from their game plan. They got away from their structure.
Yeah,
like Mike Glennon is starting there to be a complementary piece to Jordan Howard. Their offense is designed to just run the ball. Glennon throws off of play action or throws downfield on safe options. And last week they kind of got into a shootout, and they were throwing the ball to try and move the chains, and they were putting Glennon in situations where he had to like make difficult reads, throw the ball short, throw the ball intermediate, throw the ball to different receivers all over the field, and it couldn't work because that's not who Mike Glennon is. He had that awful pick six where he threw the ball way too short to the flat, and it was way too late, and it went straight to the defender. And that's the kind of thing that could happen again and completely ruin this game, and that's why you would feel confident in the Steelers. But we also have to look at the Steelers, and Roethlisberger hasn't played well to this point. He was largely just throwing the ball up in the air last week against the Vikings until the second half, when he showed a little bit more control and a little bit more precision in what he was doing. And the Steelers traveling, like Roethlisberger over the last year or so on the road, hasn't been good. And for as much as the Bears have looked bad last week, the defense still has quite a bit of talent and enough to kind of disrupt the Steelers a little bit. I think you can probably be confident in taking the Steelers -7.5, but I don't think it's one of those games where you're like, yeah, that's a guaranteed win for me.
You can get kind of lost in looking at statistics like 2-0, but it's worth remembering that they've had this summer, this really difficult summer with Le'Veon Bell, who was largely ineffective in the opening game.
Yeah,
have you seen enough from him now to think that he's going to be back to his best?
I think last week was more about the Vikings defense. The speed the Vikings defense plays at and the disruption they got up front was really, really tough for him. I don't think the Bears will get that. Bell would be a guy I'd look at for a breakout this week.
Okay, that's your thoughts, Keen. Brad, this is a game you're quite keen to talk on. Have you got the money down already? And in which case, where's it going?
I've not actually managed to get the money down. I tried to back the under yesterday. I put up an offer on Matchbook at 45.5, and I appear to have missed the boat. It's down to about 44.
Oof.
So I guess there's still a touch of value, but there's a lot less. As Kian mentioned there, the Big Ben's home and road splits are quite dramatic. I've got a few stats here. So the last 20 games at home, last 20 games on the road. So he's at home, he's throwing 2.9 touchdowns a game. On the road, he's throwing 1.05. Passing yards per game at home, 339. Passing passing yards away, 269. So it's pretty significant splits. So if we look at Steelers past 11 road games, the first half under is 11-0. You would not have had a loser backing first half unders for the Steelers on the road. So it's a bit arbitrary endpoint, small sample, but I don't know, it's also perfect. So I think there's a little bit of value there. Also, the Steelers' defense is much improved. They've invested something like the first and second round pick of the last 5 years, all in that defense. They've got a lot of young talent flying around. I'm sure Kian will be able to touch on that a bit better than I will. And they've shut down the two opponents so far, who are both pretty poor, but similar league to Mike Glennon, I would say. So I think the under is quite a good shout here.
How big a number is 45? I'm not really. I know 40 is 46 a huge number.
Well, I know that Neil was saying beforehand that the market had moved, that the line had moved, and I think Neil, you might have been slightly concerned that possibly that might make Brad rethink.
I just wondered. I mean, I wondered how confident. I quite liked the shout, but I wondered how confident you were, Brad, because I think it was 45 and a half, and I think it's a bit closer to 44 now, isn't it? I mean, 45, 44 is a big number in NFL totals. It comes up almost 4% of the time. 45 is not quite so big, but I think it's nearer to 2.5%. But,
well, look, we can get under 44.5 still for 10 to 11, and then it's about even money for under. So I'd almost plump up for under 44.5 if there's still value. But Neil, don't the Bears qualify under your 0-2 theory?
They do, yes. I'm always interested to hear. What do you think generally about the whole under over thing, though? I mean, this 40.5 per game, is it just what I said, that it's just early in the season and it's easier for defenses to be on top? Is it just random? Is there some kind of thing that we're not picking up on that's happening this season?
I think early in the year, it's less about the offenses getting timing down and getting together. I think it's mostly about defenses being fresh and being healthy. Because if you are a linebacker or a defensive lineman, less so a defensive back, because you're not hitting as often. You're still hitting very regularly, but not as often. If you're a linebacker or a defensive back, you're hitting guys once a week, then you go to hitting someone on Thursday night, then you're not hitting as much in practice, but you are still wearing your body down. So once you get through the first month, first 6-7 weeks, you would think that the offenses would take over a little bit, but it's also then you also talk about how offensive coaches probably get better at understanding what defenses are doing on a play-by-play basis. I don't really think there's one thing you can point to. There are 10, 20 different things that all come together and give the offense a greater advantage as the season wears on.
All right, that is our Week 3 preview of the NFL. Into Week 3 already. 4 games previewed for you. A profitable week last week on the Matchbook Betting Podcast. Hopefully a profitable one this week too. You can find out more great content for the NFL and indeed for the college football as well at insights.matchbook.com/playbook. From Kian Fahey.
Thank you.
Brad Allen.
Thank you for having me.
And no horse racing this week, so Neil Channing, you're off the hook. You're done.
Phew. Thank you very much.
We'll chat to you all again next week. Thanks so much. All
lucky
the best.
For the listeners.
All the best for Week 3 of the NFL. Premier League now on the Matchbook Betting Podcast. Welcome back to the show. Chew from We Love Betting, Mr. Mark O'Hare.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
And from BR Football, Sam Tai.
Hello.
Good to have you all back on the show. I rudely ignored you there, by the way, Mark. I'm well, thank you. Thank you for asking. Thanks for the consideration. Jesse May, there's some huge offers on Matchbook, which we've been talking about earlier on for the NFL, but also for the Premier League. Why should you bet on Thursdays on Matchbook for the Premier League?
Well, as you know, there's a lot of price movement in the days that kind of approach the game. And if you bet on Thursdays on the EPL and Matchbook, it is 0% commission free. So you have a chance to try and play an early price. If it moves the right way, you can obviously hedge out. And if you're in my case where it moves the wrong way, you can obviously double down. It's good value. You know, if there is liquidity there on Thursday, so if you know your picks in advance, have a shot and get commission free.
We've got 4 games to talk about. Let's first of all talk about the game that's live on BT Sport, 5:30 on Saturday. We've already had this game in the League Cup during the week. Leicester City against Liverpool. The betting on Matchbook currently, Jesse.
Liverpool a favorite away. You might get even money. There's a bit of a spread there, and that is the handicap. Liverpool -0.5. So you'll get the side. You'll get the tie on side for Leicester City, maybe around 2.08, with the over-under at 2.75.
Mark, one of the theories about Liverpool is just how good they have been away from home. They are still good at Anfield, but away from home they were to play that quick counter-attacking play. They were disappointing, though, in the League Cup. I know it's the League Cup, but it was still disappointing. And there's starting to be a bit of a gloomy cloud over Liverpool. Can it lift this weekend?
I'm not so sure it will be lifted. I think the increasing pressure on Jurgen Klopp is slightly unfair. Obviously, there's stats going around this week that he's got a worse win ratio than David Moyes and Louis van Gaal at Man United and Brendan Rodgers. So there is pressure building. They haven't won in four games now, despite playing reasonably well in all four. And let's not forget, they do have to go to Moscow for the Champions League on Tuesday night, which is a very important tie. Of course, the Champions League is always well thought of in Liverpool. You mentioned the game on Tuesday. I'm not taking too much interest in that. Liverpool did make eight changes. Coutinho got 45 minutes. Again, they played well for the large swaths of that game. They had 70% of the ball, 21 shots. The same old errors just keep cropping up, and that's why Klopp's coming under pressure. They had 35 shots against Burnley at the weekend, drew 1-1. But the thing is, they're just not creating enough high quality opportunities really in the final thirds to sort of make those shots worthwhile, if that makes sense. The expected goals on Saturday was obviously in Liverpool's favour, but it wasn't the landslide that the sort of shot data suggested. I think Liverpool were only really one goal better than Burnley based on the sort of opportunities that they created. And because their attack isn't functioning how it should be and putting those chances away, the defence is therefore coming under sort of fierce criticism and serious tests, really, because it is creaking. The set piece worries really do concern me. And, you know, they also failed to beat Sevilla at home, of course, last week in the Champions League. And so, you know, Tuesday night is a big tie for them. And looking at the odds, you know, it implies here that Liverpool have got, you know, around about 50 or 52% chance of winning this match. I just don't think that's right. I looked at Klopp's away record in the Premier League. His win ratio is at 47%. So there's not a huge amount of difference there. But, you know, I do like this Leicester team, especially when they're playing at home. I thought they looked quite uncomfortable against Huddersfield last weekend. Quite ironic, really, considering the two teams play similar styles outside of possession. But they were quite fortunate to get that point, an offside goal ruled against Huddersfield. And although they are struggling for clean sheets as well under Craig Shakespeare, this game should be quite enjoyable. There should be plenty of goals and goal-mouth action. But I want to keep Leicester on side here. I think even money on Leicester plus a 0.5 start. So you're making money if Leicester avoid defeat is the way to go. Appreciate this involves an incredible season under Claudio Ranieri, but their home record under Ranieri and Shakespeare is 23 wins, 10 draws and 7 defeats. Their record against Chelsea, Liverpool, the two Manchester clubs and North London clubs is 4 wins, 4 draws and 5 defeats. They beat Liverpool here 2-1 last season. They've beaten them in all three games. They've played against them at home under Jurgen Klopp. And the match odds just imply Leicester have a 25% chance of winning this. That's just wrong to me. I think they'll target the set pieces. They'll target the dead ball situations. Vardy and Okazaki will hassle and harry that defence. And I'm sure they'll target Trent Alexander as well, just like Burnley did last weekend. They've also got the threat from Mahrez out wide, the aerial threat too. I think there's a lot to say Leicester can get a result here. And I think they've been slightly undervalued in the market.
Liverpool really needed to sign Van Dijk over the summer, like badly needed to get him, because that defence needs to be upgraded. For that matter, they needed to sign a goalkeeper as well. So we'll see what way Jesse wants to approach this when we talk about the charity bets towards the end of the podcast, but that sounds a very confident note of selection from Mark for Leicester City in the 5:30 kickoff. The first game that Sam's going to talk to us about is Southampton against Manchester United. Let's get the betting on Matchbook from Jesse first.
Man United darlings, they are 1.8, 5-6 away, favored by 0.75 goals, with the over-under at 2.5.
And it's the over-unders that you're interested in, Sam.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a little bit tight. United have already won 3 games 4-0 this season, which is quite imperious when you look at it in isolation. But you dig into the way those games are going, and I feel like some of these scorelines are flattering United. And they are capitalising on late flurries of goals when they wear opposition down and they take control of the centre. They go one up and then they sort of take control. They don't let you back in it, and then they hit you with 3 at the end. And we've seen, like, I think it's like 7 goals already up in the 80th minute or after. And the fact that Mourinho has guys like Anthony Martial to come off the bench and take advantage of the legs that Marcus Rashford tires out over the course of 80 minutes is just working in their favour. But I mean, they have played very well, but they've also these teams that they've put four past, you know, West Ham, Swansea, not good, Everton, not great at the moment as well, and full of defensive mistakes. Southampton, games at St Mary's are pretty boring nowadays. Not a lot happens. It's a bit rubbish to watch. Southampton don't really score ever at home, which is disappointing for them. But what they do very well is keep it tight. And if you were watching the Palace game at the weekend, the 12:30, very physical in midfield and give up very little. So with Mario Lemina playing very well and Oriol Romeu as well, and the fact that Pogba's not in there, I think the way Man United try and win games, which is to take control using a physical midfield and hold you at arm's length and then batter you late on, I don't think that's going to work as well. And I think when you come up against the Southampton side, who are very well coached under Pellegrino, at least from a defensive capacity, I would say that the goals are going to be a little bit sparing here. Probably under 2.5 is what I like. As long as Southampton can keep their concentration and fitness to the end, because they just have to be aware of what happens in those last 10 minutes. And I'm sure they will be. And I'm also, I don't know what's going to happen, but the fact that Van Dijk came on for a few minutes at the end of the Palace game, I wonder if Pellegrino just goes three at the back like he did at Deportivo Alaves last season and just tries to close this one out and plays Wesley Hoot and Van Dijk and then one of Stevens and Yoshida and really grinds this one. I would not be surprised if he does. So I think it's going to be really tight. And to be honest, I would expect United to win, but I wouldn't bank on it. And I don't think there's going to be too much here in terms of goal action.
It sounds like we need a bet if we're going to be watching this game. So the unders are certainly interesting me for Southampton United. A 3 p.m. kickoff on Saturday afternoon in the Premier League. Also at the same time, Everton will take on Bournemouth. It's very good of Jose Mourinho to wait until Rooney was taken off the field before embarrassing Everton last week. Can they bounce back this weekend against Bournemouth? They spent an awful lot of money and it hasn't gone their way so far. The betting on Matchbook, Jesse.
I like all the side stuff surrounding Wayne Rooney. I mean, you know, when the tabloids figure, you wonder if it affects the price.
You're only interested in the salacious scandals surrounding Mr. Rooney. That's all.
No. Only if we can make a few dollars off it. But, you know, Wayne Rooney's okay in my book. But Everton, pretty big favorites at home. Around 1.67, maybe 1.7 in the 1-by-2. And giving up 3/4 of a goal with a standard over-under of 2.5, guys.
So Wayne Rooney's got more points than Everton. Can they match him this weekend? There's the obvious joke done on the show. Mark, your thoughts on this game at Goodison Park?
I think this is perfectly set up for Everton to get their season back on track. Bournemouth tend to keep their same shape, same approach, same system, wherever they play, against whoever they play. And I think they could come unstuck this weekend. You know, I think there's been a bit of an overreaction to Everton. Yeah, they have been playing very poorly, but let's take last weekend's game at Old Trafford for an example. I thought they competed very well for most of the second half. And if you took the expected goals data from the first 80 minutes of that game, it was only 1.4 to 1.1 in United's favour. It was only that last sort of 10 minutes when, as Sam quite rightly outlined with United, they battered them in that last 10 minutes, as they have done all season to most teams. So I do think there's been an overreaction to Everton. I think the net outlay, the net spend was only around 30 million. Of course, they improved that defence, but didn't replace Romelu Lukaku. They are lacking pace in forward areas. I think it's over 6 hours now without a goal. But they have been on a really tough run. And you look at the fixtures coming up for Everton, Bournemouth, Burnley, Brighton. Koeman's under fierce scrutiny, but if he can't pick up points this weekend, he's going to be in trouble. But I do like Everton. I do think there's, as I say, been an overreaction. At Goodison Park, they always tend to be very, very strong indeed. 14 wins, 4 draws and 3 defeats under Koeman. They've only failed to score in 3 of those games. 10 of their 14 wins were by at least 2 goals. And they scored 3 times or more on 8 occasions. Now, if we exclude the top 6 from that, they've actually won 12, drawn 2 and lost 0 at Goodison Park. So, yeah, they haven't got Lukaku. Yeah, they're in a bit of a rut right now. But I think the odds are slightly in our favour here. You know, I think 1.67 is very fair. 1.7 is even more fair, quite generous actually, on an Everton win. So I'm backing them with a 3/4 handicap. Just on Bournemouth, really, I think they will have a go. They always tend to have a go, and that leaves them slightly open, slightly vulnerable at the back. They had lost. Let's bear in mind they have lost 4 of their first 5, had to come from behind against Brighton. And if you look at the expected goals differential table at the moment, Bournemouth are struggling. You know, they are second from bottom in that. They are the worst performing team in the Premier League in 2017, just 6 wins. They've lost 9 of their last 15 away. They've lost 13 and 19 away at top half teams since they were promoted. Failed to score on 9 occasions as well. And then defensively, as I mentioned, just 10 clean sheets since the start of last season. They conceded at least 3 goals in 8 of 12 meetings against top 6 teams. Of course, Everton aren't a top 6 team, but they're pushing to at least try and compete for the top 6. But more kind of alarmingly, I guess, for Bournemouth, really, they've conceded at least 2 goals in 15 of the last 21 away games since the start of last season, and conceded 3 or more goals in 7 of 9 away defeats. I think that the real bet to be had here is Everton to score over 1.5 goals, which is, I believe, around 4 to 5. But for the bet here, I'm going to put Everton up at minus 0.75 on the Asian handicap.
A convincing case made by Mark for Everton at Goodison Park on Saturday before all of those games at 12:30. West Ham take on Tottenham Hotspur, a Tottenham side who will probably be relieved that they don't have to play at Wembley. It's becoming an actual thing, folks. Sam's going to talk about this game. First of all, let's get the betting on Matchbook from Jesse.
Yeah, we really cashed in on Tottenham last weekend. That was fun. They're away, though, and around 1.65 in the 1-by-2, giving a full goal to West Ham at home, and over under 2.75.
That was fun. Sorry, Tottenham fans. West Ham-Tottenham, what are your thoughts on this game? Live on Sky Sports 1, or Sky Sports Main Event, as it is now. Sky Sports Premier League, even. Whatever. They've got so many channels, it's becoming confusing. Sam, your thoughts on the game?
Emmett, you stole my opening few lines there regarding the Wembley thing. And, yeah, you're cashing in on me on Spurs last weekend, so let's not laugh about it too much. Wembley is a thing now, isn't it? It definitely is a thing. Like, I really wanted to not believe in this. I really wanted it for Spurs to start the season strongly and to beat, you know, Burnley and Swansea at home, and for this whole Wembley thing just to evaporate. But they keep bringing it on themselves. So the fact that Spurs are away from home this week is very enticing, and that's why I am happy to back them. The odds are obviously better when they are away from home anyway, but at minus one or on the handicap of a goal, I quite like the look of Spurs at West Ham. West Ham are pretty bad. I know that they've steadied the ship recently. Have a slight issue with how the first goal they scored against Huddersfield was celebrated, because it looped in off a player and hit the bar, and it was the luckiest thing I've ever seen. Yeah. There's just no right, really, to run off sprinting to the corner flag celebrating that. A very gracious, candid smile and a raised hand is the most you can do there, I think.
He was thinking of his goal bonus.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. The first goal of the season.
I bet with emotion, Sam, but I know exactly how you feel.
It was the first goal they'd scored this season. So, okay, fair enough. But I don't think it quite puts West Ham back on track.
No.
They've had a tough start. I think structurally they're quite a poor side. And what fills me with confidence here is that Tottenham, away from home, have been ruthless. They have been taking teams apart easily. I mean, look, we talked about how Everton are better than their league position suggests, and they've had a tough schedule. But to go to Goodison Park and win 3-0, it doesn't even matter if Everton are necessarily playing that well or not. To do that is absolutely remarkable. And that was a true battering. So Tottenham, away from the glare of Wembley, seem to be a little bit freer. And that makes them essentially one of the most dangerous teams in the league. So I don't think West Ham, even though they have steadied a little bit here, I don't think they can stand up to the test of Tottenham here.
Convincing case there, Sam. But, I mean, giving up a goal, especially away, is a pretty big handicap anyway. Is there still value in this line?
For sure. I mean, you look at Spurs winning 2-0 at Newcastle on the opening day, Spurs winning 3-0 at Goodison. They play West Ham, probably the worst of those three teams. I'm okay with it. I would expect Spurs to win 2 or 3-0.
Also, West Ham are already giving up a goal because they've got Joe Hart in goal, so.
Hey, he's just got a clean sheet.
It's the joke that'll never get old, though. That's it. 4 Premier League games previewed this weekend from the lads. We will get the thoughts of Jesse May and what way he wants to approach this at the end of the podcast in the charity section. But for now, really enthusiastic stuff. I'm looking forward to the weekend. Sam Tai from BOR Football and Mark O'Hare from We Love Betting. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll chat to you again next week.
Great stuff. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Golf Now, the Matchbook Betting Podcast. We're off to Atlanta, Georgia for the Tour Championship. It's live on Sky Sports Golf all weekend. And to preview it, the Fairway Wedge himself from Twitter.com is back. Hello, Ollie Noonan.
Hi, Emmett. Thanks very much for having me.
Great to have you back, sir. So golf is starting to wind down. We were just talking about the fact that they're going to have to look at the schedule next year, because with the NFL being so big now and the Premier League as well, they're hardly probably the viewers. I know if you're a hardcore golf fan and you listen to this podcast, you absolutely love the game, and obviously we're going to preview it in depth, but ratings have to be taking a hit at this time of year.
Oh, absolutely. It's about time that some smart TV exec came up with a real split screen option, isn't it? So that we can basically punt and watch all the sport to our heart's content. That's the dream, at least. So that way I wouldn't have to set up more than one TV in my lounge.
Was it Mesut Ozil has like five televisions in his room? So did he tweet that one night, or he's just
that's the minimum setup you need to be a sports bettor these days. I mean, especially for the NFL Sundays.
Oh, yeah.
At least 10 screens. At least 10 screens.
I mean, even though it's winding down, I mean, there is some drama, right? This is the biggest prize of the year, cash-wise, and how many people can win it at this stage?
So there's 30 left in the running, so this week's tournament is the final 30 players on the FedEx Cup standings, and they kind of redraw the points so that any player that is situated in the top five of the standings at this point in time has the potential to win the tournament and therefore win the FedEx Cup. So if you are one of those five, so that's Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, Mark Leishman and John Rahm, if you win the tournament this week, you get, on top of the $1.5 million first prize for winning the tournament, you get a cool $10 million for winning the FedEx Cup. So just shy of $12 million for 4 days 4 days work, which isn't too bad, really, is it?
If anybody else wins, then it depends on how those five really finish.
Oh, yeah. If anyone else wins, then you're getting your calculator out and you're employing Messrs. Duckworth and Lewis and asking them to do their best in order to work out who's won the thing. So let's just concentrate on this week's tournament, I think, and hope we can find a winner there.
Let's crack on for Eastlake, the curtain closer for the US Tour season, and find out Ollie's first big bet of the weekend.
Yeah, so it's a bit boring, a bit predictable, but there's just one place to start, and that's Jordan Spieth for me this week. So he's coming into this tournament as the leader in the FedEx Cup, and I fully expect him to go home as the champion of the FedEx Cup and the champion this week. So his form line at the tournament is very interesting. So he's played it on four previous occasions. He won it in 2015 and was second on his debut in 2013. And the other two tournaments weren't too much to write home about, really. So 27th in 2014, 17th in 2016. But he's admitted that he kind of got his pacing wrong, if you like, of his season last year. And he ran out of gas to a certain extent towards the end of the season. And he's realised that he kind of wants to focus on the big prize this week. And all his kind of pressers, if you like, the press conferences have been talking about how much he's been really focusing on the FedEx Cup as a big prize of his. He wants to win the Player of the Year award. He wants to win the scoring title, the Vardon Trophy. And obviously he wants to win the tournament as well this week. And I think really, although he is the favourite, he represents just such a massive rock solid bet. And sometimes when you see a price around the 5-1, 11-2 mark in golf, you think, God, that's a bit short. I'm not sure I want to touch that. But it's worth remembering that there's only 30 players in the tournament this week. And, you know, if we equate that to a horse race, for example, we've seen on a few times when the Grand National has been won by the favourite going off around, you know, 6 or 7 to 1. Mm. And there's 10 more horses in that, really. So if you're happy to take the price around a favourite in the Grand National, then you're going to be doing the same and getting probably a better value bet on Jordan Spieth this week. So alongside the fact that he's, you know, super hyped up and really wanting to win the FedEx Cup, and he's playing with his good friend Justin Thomas, who is probably his main competitor for the Player of the Year award, he's just got such a solid profile. You know, he leads the scoring average on tour, he leads the birdie average on tour, he's first in strokes gained approach, second in putting average, and second in strokes gained tee to green. So you know, you can see why he's had such a good season and why he's been so successful over the last few years, really.
We've talked about Jordan Spieth, what, like 5-6 times, I think, here. And, I mean, we've kind of gone hot, cold, hot, cold, hot on him. No, I mean, you know, he's a hard guy. Is he a hard guy to get right? Or, you know, what's your overall view on, like, just how we do overall backing him?
I think he's overall, if you backed him to level stakes each tournament, I think you'd probably be a small winner at this stage of his career. And certainly in small fields, you'd be a definite winner. So his victories have come in restricted fields a few times, if you like. So, as I said, he won here in 2015, and he also won the Tournament of Champions a couple of years ago as well, which is another restricted field just for the winners of the previous season. And also, he's obviously won the Masters previously as well, which is another restricted field. And he tends to play very, very well in those sorts of fields where the fields are a bit smaller, they're condensed with higher quality players. It really seems to have him up his game. And I think he's another one that he tends to focus on the big events. He tends to bring his A game to those events. And more often than not, you tend to get a bit of a pushed out price in these sorts of events. Maybe not so much this week, but usually you tend to get, you know, maybe a couple of pips higher than you would on him ordinarily. So I think you'd if you were backing him to level six, as I say, I think you'd be a small winner. I haven't got those stats in front of me, unfortunately. But generally speaking, in a restricted field, I want to take the player that I consider to be the best in the world, and his form over the playoffs has kind of stood him out to be probably the best player in the world, in my opinion. So he finished second in both of the first two events and finished seventh last week, closed with a very impressive bogey-free 67. So he's really coming into this week strong, and I expect him to go very, very well. And one other thing that I would mention is that he has equated Eastlake to being very similar in terms of the way it fits his eye to Augusta. And we know his record at Augusta kind of is second to none, really. So he's won it there. He's had two runner-ups, one of which was really, for all intents and purposes, should have been a victory that he just threw away via one bad hole, which we don't really need to repeat. And the other finish there, he had his 12th. So, you know, in his four events, he's finished no worse than 12th and finished in the top two, three times. And he just has a comfort level at that course, which he's equated to this course. And I think coming in with the confidence he's in, and with all of the kind of intrinsic motivation that he has to be the best on tour, win all the trophies, win all of the awards, I think he's the one to beat this week. And I think that he represents a fair value at kind of somewhere between 5-1 and 11-2, really.
And he's arguably striking the ball better than ever as well. Ollie's just mentioned the price. What price can we get on Matchbook, Jesse?
So it's looking around 6.2 right now. You could post for 6.3. It's quite close. I'm feeling like we should just go win only here. I'm just wondering, Ollie, if you're going to put an each way bet in, or if you think the place has got value. It'd be quite short, obviously.
Yeah, I'm going to be just backing in win only. But I would say, and I know that obviously we're focusing here on the value bets on the exchange, and I've got one in the top five market coming up. But I think there are some decent offers that are worth exploring with some of the more traditional bookmakers, where they're still paying out five paces each way, despite the fact that it is a
field of 30
man field. So if you fancy a couple of longer priced runners, then I would suggest that possibly having a smaller each way bet on those runners with one of those bookmakers is worthwhile. Of course, getting your win only bet to just make sure that you're topping up your winnings on Matchbook as well. But you know, if you're looking for a bit of each way value, then possibly that's another avenue to explore.
Ollie, who's your second selection for the Tour Championship?
So my second selection is Kevin Chappell. He has kind of really come into his own over the last couple of years. And the reason that I'm keen to back him this week is primarily the price. So he's available for around about 40, 45 to 1, which I think is a really good price given that he was, he lost a playoff here last year, dropped out on the first hole after tying in regulation with Rory McIlroy and Ryan Moore, which was his debut. So, you know, he clearly took to the course very well. And he comes in this week on good form. So his playoff performances so far have been a tie for sixth, a tie for 35th, and a tie for 12th last week. And he finished last week playing his last five holes of his final round in five under par with no bogeys. So, you know, he kind of really seemed to find something in his game towards the end of last week. And I think that bodes well coming into a course where he has good memories from last year. One of the other things I like about Chappell is that he tends to play his best golf in tougher fields. So he finished seventh in the Masters this year, and he's been a previous playoff loser, as I say, in this event last year, but also at the Players Championship, which is widely considered to be the fifth major. And he's also had podium finishes at the WGC Bridgestone and at the US Open previously. So he really ups his game when the fields get tough. And there's no doubt that you know, this is a very tough field and there are some, well, a lot of the world's best players here. So I think that in that, in this sort of company, he feels very at home, and a price of 40-1 seems like a good value there. And I think the other thing to mention with him is just the fact that he's recently secured his first ever berth on a team, US team, for a team event, which he is, has been selected for the President's Cup in a week or two. And I think that he'll want to go into that event with a bit of confidence and kind of prove that he belongs, really. So all of those things considered, I think 40-1 in this shortened field, it represents fair value. And he's the sort of guy that you might want to have an each way bet on and be backing him in the top five markets as well, because I think he's well entitled to be there or thereabouts.
You know, I think these are the kind of runners that you can post up like around 50-1 and get matched, because people seem to be keen to lay longer shots in these restricted fields.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think that's it's a good strategy, certainly. So if you are someone who's really looking to maximize your value, as we're obviously looking to do on this podcast, then that's a good strategy to take, I'd say.
So Texas Open champion Kevin Chappell, your second selection. And finally, you were talking about a bet for finishing in the top five. Reveal all, Ollie.
Yeah, that's right. So this one is John Rahm. So I was just looking back through his stats over the last, this calendar year. And he's played 21 tournaments and finished in the top five of 10 of those tournaments. So just from a maths perspective, given that this is a reduced field with only 30 runners, most of those top 10s have come in tournaments that have got, you know, 100 plus runners. And we can get around about 9-4 on him finishing in the top five. So this is really just a maths play. And also, it's not like he's not coming in good form. So he's finished in the top five of each of the playoff events as well. So, you know, his form line reads tied third, tied fourth, tied fifth. So he would have cashed in each one of those events. And he's also one of the players with a chance of winning the $10 million first prize if he were to win the tournament. So he's got that motivation as well. So I think that is a really fair price for John Rahm to finish in the top five, given his previous form this season and his recent form as well, really. The one caveat to that is it's his first time playing the course. So, you know, we don't have anything previous to go on in terms of how it fits his eye. But I think just from a pure maths perspective, it seems like a decent bet to me, and I'll be certainly investing there.
And Jesse, what price can we get?
Yeah, you can post up 3.3 on the place. It's very convincing argument. And I mean, the Kelly calculator is telling us if we really make him a 7-4 shot to place, that we should be betting almost 8%. But I think it sounds attractive.
Yeah, John Rahm's been having such a fantastic season. Plus, you've always, basically in every podcast we've done this year, you haven't always put him up, but you've always made such a strong case for John Rahm that kind of price just seems equally appealing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he is a personal favourite. You know, I was backing him at fancy prices before he turned pro. Sadly, none of those. I've been eating a lot of value pie at those long prices, but now that he's a bit shorter, I'm still happy to tuck in where I think he represents value. And again, I think this is another spot here. So one of these days, he'll repay my faith, and I'm hopeful of this week.
You've got John Rahm, I've got Sergio Garcia, and eventually we'll stop having our hearts broken, and it'll all work out well.
Exactly. What is it about the Spaniards, Emmett, hey?
Oh, man.
Funny to tell that story, Ollie, because I think I backed Retief Goosen at 100 or 150-1 for a good solid year and a half. Never did anything. And then, of course, you know, when he was shorter.
It's a painful game, this value hunting, isn't it? But, you know, long term, we just keep doing the right things. We'll get paid off eventually.
Someday, lads. Someday. Ollie's also got an in-depth preview available on the Matchbook site right now for the Tour Championship at insights.matchbook.com. Ollie, I'm sure as the golf season ends, we will still chat to you again very, very soon. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Best of luck for this weekend.
Cheers, lads. Good luck. Thanks very much for having me. Speak to you soon.
Brought together by their shared views on maximizing expected value, Matchbook have partnered with Reg, raising for effective giving. They are the charity of choice for many professional poker players. They use science and rational decision-making to maximize expected value when helping to reduce suffering in the world. At the start of season two, Matchbook very kindly gave us a betting bank of £5,000, which will eventually go to charity at the end of the season. What is the current status of that betting bank, Jesse May?
We're at 4,930, Emmett. We had some great results last week, except, and this is on me, you warned me against going overboard on the horse racing. I did. We paid.
Yeah, it's all right. It's okay. I did watch the race on ITV kind of through gritted teeth. Part of me was going, yay! The other part was going, oh no, what a disaster. But anyway, it's fine.
I'll talk to the boys about it later. I mean, obviously, you know, I don't mind losing, but a short price like that, and I believe both the horses we laid came in first and second. So I wonder if maybe the ground changed and we probably, you know, shouldn't make bets on that kind of confidence when you don't know what the ground is. I want to ask the boys about that.
To be honest about it, Capri was the best horse in the race and Crystal Ocean was the second most exciting horse in the race. So that's why I was concerned about it. But anyway, it's all right. We just decided to banish horse racing from the show this week as punishment for their failure. We'll consider bringing them back next week. Of course, we'll have them back next week and we'll be glad to have them on the show. Let's recap this week's charity bets. Jesse May, we've talked about golf, we've talked about the Premier League, and we've got some great insight in both of those sports, but I think particularly at the start of the show for the NFL. What are your best bets, so in terms of the charity bets for the weekend?
So I was pretty excited with the NFL bets. I thought there was some really good stuff there.
Yeah.
Loved, you know, I'm kind of, obviously we're just getting to know Kian, but I'm kind of getting the idea that he's a real quarterback expert, and that a lot of stuff that he says about quarterbacks in particular, you need to take very seriously.
Have you seen Kian's tweets in the middle of games?
I mean, he's just all over it.
It's phenomenal.
He really knows his stuff. And actually, so for that reason, I think I'm going to take a pass on that Seattle game.
Okay.
Because he did highlight that thing about Russell Wilson. And yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't put people off it, but I think we'll take a pass on that one, especially since the line may have moved slightly as well. Let's hit the rest of them. We're going to hit Oakland -3. For 150, try and post up at 1.97 there. That's a 3% of our bankroll play, which is about right for a 2% edge, I think, on this line. And then the same, the over 54 on that same game. So we're gonna be hitting twice. We're gonna post up 1.97 or so there. Try and get that hit. Take Cincinnati +8.5. I think, you know, anytime Neil Channing says he's betting against Green Bay at home, there must be something there. And I think that's a good angle he's taken. And then let's just bet 100 on the under 44.5 at the Chicago game, because as the boys have pointed out, that line has moved. And so we'll post up around 10 to 11 there. And if we don't get it, we'll just let it go. In the EPL, I thought I'm still a little worried, I have to be honest with you, that we're still a little early in the season. But I thought the guys made great cases for the under 2.5 in the Man United versus Southampton game.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's take that for 100. And also Everton -0.75 versus Bournemouth.
Who?
My mouth is burning.
Listen, this isn't a Gordon Ramsay chef show. This isn't the Great British Bake Off. Bournemouth.
I'm going to play it conservative and pass on the other two for now. The Leicester +0.5 and Tottenham -1, just to take it easy for a week there. And then, as far as the golf goes, Jordan Spieth. We're going to go for £50 on that.
Yeah, we got to smash him.
Around 6.3. But I actually thought the Kevin Chappell just sounded like it might have a little more value in it, because, you know, anytime you can get a little bit of a longer shot there, people aren't fancying it. So we're going to try and put 100 there up at 51 and see if it gets matched.
What? Are you serious?
Does that sound crazy? I mean, if he's really, you know, if Kevin Chappell is really, 25-1 or 30-1, you should be betting around 3%. So I figure, well, we'll bet 2% and see what happens. Oh yeah, listen, if he hits, we'll win $5,000.
Yeah, I would have thought, based on how Ollie was talking, that Jordan would have been the bigger bet, that we would have been really going for Spieth and then like a saver on Chappell. But you want to do it the other way around.
I was really just, you know, thinking about the edge here, and I mean, it feels to me like you know, how big can the edge be on Spieth? Is it really going to be as much as 10%?
Yeah.
Or is it more? Is it more like a kind of marginal, a couple of percent?
I'm not going to be the one getting a talking to next week from you guiltily saying, oh yeah, and by the way, we won 500 on Kevin Chappell. It could have been $5,000 if the presenter had shut his mouth. But anyway, that's fine. So if you
how about we did our money because we refused to bet more on Jordan Spieth? Look, you know it. Everybody's got it. This is we're betting for the charity here, but I mean, you guys have heard the experts, and I think you can't go wrong if you back their selections. It's just a question of deciding how much their edge is and plugging that in.
And thankfully, that pressure is on you and not on me. That is a recap of the bets. You can find out more about the show on the website, podcast.matchbook.com. You can follow us on Twitter, at Team Matchbook as well. From Jesse May.
Have a great weekend, guys.
You too, my friend. And from me, Emmett Kennedy, thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts would be greatly appreciated. It doesn't take a whole lot of time to do it, and it helps to spread the word about the show. We would be delighted if you would oblige us in doing so. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll chat to you again next week. Have a great week. Enjoy the weekend's betting. God bless.